Welcome to the Champions for Social Good podcast, conversations for people dedicated to social impact. I'm Rachel Hutchison, and I lead corporate social responsibility at Blackbaud. Today, we're seeing more and more social good movements take hold, but we often don't think about the behind-the-scenes work and strategy that goes into making them successful. I'm here today with Grant Garrison, Managing Director of GoodCorps, to talk about what it really means to build a movement that effectively advances a cause. So welcome, Grant.
Thank you.
So, Grant, can you just start by telling us a little bit about your background and your experience working in social good?
Sure. So I think I come to this work from a maybe slightly unusual direction, which is I started out in the nonprofit and foundation space. So I was really passionate about community organizing and social change in college. And then I worked at the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, which is the second generation of Rockefeller philanthropy, and really learned the ropes of kind of what traditional American private philanthropy looks like there. Helped build some portfolios around youth engagement and also in the former Yugoslavia. And it was very much on that track of, you know, working in the nonprofit, kind of what you might think of as the pure social good space, but also felt constrained by it. I felt like it was, you know, it's 10% of the economy is the nonprofit sector, but the other 90%, I was really curious about. And so when I actually saw an opportunity when Good was first creating GoodCorps as a social impact consulting firm to kind of complement the media side and work on the Pepsi Refresh project, which was at the time, you know, the largest kind of cause marketing campaign that really had been seen at the time. I thought, wow, cool. Like, Good seems really interesting. They're trying to broaden who's interested in social impact. Pepsi is doing this really new approach to using marketing dollars to engage people in social good. And I just kind of jumped on. And I've been on that same ride for the last 8.5 years.
That's fantastic. I know that I've been a long follower and fan of Good, the magazine. And I think it is interesting the way it portrays what good is and what social good is. And, you know, I've been working in the, you could call it social good sector for more than 25 years, but at the beginning, people really called that the nonprofit sector. And then more and more, and you look at what Blackbaud does now, we really work across the spectrum from individuals to corporations and everything in between. It's exciting to me that we have more people at the table because, you know, the way I look at it is there are enough problems, we need everybody to help with the solution. So Good is this interesting, kind of really appealing publication that kind of gets to that. But at GoodCorps, you are providing consulting, and we talked a little bit about this before the podcast, and I was going to say that you were helping to build movements, but you have a slightly different view. So can you talk about what you're doing, what it takes, are you building movements or not? Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely, yeah. And as we were saying, I just have a lot of reverence for what I understand to be movements, of which there haven't been that many in this country, you know, the civil rights movement, the women's rights movement, the environmental movement. And I suppose then as a result, as someone who sells a lot for our consulting side, I'm just really careful about that term because I think it for me, it just has a lot of meaning. And so when I think about what we do, I think we're helping companies as well as foundations and nonprofits develop breakthrough programs that will engage many more people around their brand and around the purpose that they see in their brand and in their company and their products. And that might have relationships with movements. And I think actually there's a lot of potential the closer brands can find themselves to movements, which is really a calibration that every brand is making, kind of risk-reward calibration. But I think that for me, movements are and should be independent of any one single kind of actor. And so whether it's a foundation or a nonprofit or a company, I think of these as kind of enabling organizations that might be participants in a broader movement, but then I guess I'm too humble to imagine us as movement builders and rather sort of enablers of a new player in movement, which I think companies would be seen to be.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. So are you saying that movements themselves are more organic and happen for lots of different reasons, kind of coming together at one moment? And then that would mean that a brand kind of adds to that versus the brand starting the movement.
Exactly. And it's an incredibly important role. So, you know, just thinking historically, Levi Strauss and Company, which is a client of ours, took incredibly brave stands around LGBT equality way earlier than anyone else. And that provides powerful cover for those who are, you know, on the front lines of building the LGBTQ equality movement. But I don't think, I'm not sure they would even say that they are movement builders as much as they are allies to that movement. And then just thinking more recently, with you know, we have some of the Parkland students and their parents and teachers here with us, and you know, those folks are doing unbelievable and fast and incredible work on a movement around safety, school safety, and gun violence. And we work with Dick's Sporting Goods, who then came out after that shooting and said, "Hey, we're not going to do this. We're not going to sell these guns anymore." But again, I think it's appropriate that they were responding to the movement that was generated rather than saying, "Hey, we, Dick's Sporting Goods, are leading the gun violence movement." That would be uncomfortable for them, and they wouldn't want to say that anyway.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me because there's a lot of kind of rhetoric in the world right now, and I have an 18-year-old and a 20-year-old, and this idea, even on college campuses, when they look at who they're applying, or they're trying to appeal to students as change makers, and you even look at the freshman forum seminar, excuse me, opportunities that these students have, and there's a lot about movement building and be a change maker, and it's such an appealing word or an appealing idea, very powerful for someone to say, "I want to build movements." And instead of, you know, you're talking about being an actor in that, being an asset in that, which is an interesting nuance.
Yeah.
So talking about these, I forget the actual term that you used, but in doing the actual impactful projects, brand building that you do, how do you measure that they're successful? Do you have any kind of KPI that you might use? Everyone loves KPIs.
Great question.
But what is it?
You know, it's a great question. And I actually find that there is a surprising lack of measurement in our space. While there is a lot of measurement and data in marketing in general right now, it's an interesting, I don't totally understand why that hasn't been applied as rigorously maybe in the social good frontier of marketing. But the types of things we like to think about are awareness. So as we were talking about, there are a myriad issues, and the leaders and brands and people associated with any issue think that issue is the most important issue. But of course, everyone's attention is divided in a million directions, and normal people are extremely busy with the day-to-day that they go through, so they obviously aren't going to be able to pay attention to all those things. So the first kind of question is, on this issue that brand X is taking a stand on, where, how do we lift that in the public consciousness or in the consumer consciousness or the target audience consciousness to say, okay, this issue matters to me, I'm aware of it. The second then is perception, which is, what do I think about it? So, you know, it's interesting, people are more aware of gun violence than they were before, you know, the recent set of shootings and the Parkland student activism. And that's wonderful, but we also, of course, want to shift their perception to, you know, supporting common sense, you know, gun safety legislation. So that's kind of part two, right? How do you shift from, I know about this problem, to I share an opinion of this problem that we, whoever we is, want you to have.
So do you work with your customers not only to understand how to build their moment, leverage mm-hmm. that moment, but then also determine how do we tell that this work is actually, and it would be different
yes.
for each one.
Absolutely.
You know, you would want more people advocating, more people voting a different yeah. way, et cetera.
Yeah. Right. And that you're speaking then, and I totally agree to sort of like the third step, which is once we've shifted perception, can we get people to action? And one of the really interesting things about being a rare consulting unit embedded within a media organization. So 90% of Good Media Group is media, 10% is the consulting firm, is that we actually have a platform that reaches 120 million people a month, and we have a data science unit led by a PhD who actually can run these tests with our audience. So while we advise our clients and we support them in building metrics for their campaigns, we also have our own ability to run those metrics, and that can happen with clients that are crossover clients, mm-hmm. But it also, you know, can be independent. If we're just curious about something, we can actually learn about it ourselves, which is really powerful.
Yeah, and flipping back to the magazine for a second, one of the things that I've always appreciated about it is the really interesting kind of infographic, data-focused right. views, like of the city of the future, or whatever the topic is, and it's yeah. something that you look at and you're like that is a really interesting view that makes you think much more broadly. And I said at the beginning that it's not just about what nonprofits are doing or even what causes are doing. It's really about these broad issues that we're all facing, like city infrastructure or how we all care for the environment better in our everyday lives. It's really interesting. So I think that intersection between the media side and the consulting side is kind of interesting. So you mentioned a few organizations that you'd worked with and examples. Can you talk a little bit more about the work you've done? Just give us a couple examples.
Yes, and it's extremely varied, as is this space. You know, just being at the Social Innovation Summit, I mean, there's all different manifestations. But I thought of two that I think maybe show the range of the kind of work we do. So one is we did work with Dick's Sporting Goods on their Sports Matter platform. So essentially, this is an extremely fast-growing retail and e-commerce sporting goods store. They had been giving away money, but wanted to bring that together into something that felt more like a kind of consistent platform. Mm-hmm. So with the remarkable and talented folks there on the marketing side and the foundation side, we came up together with this idea of really trying to bring more power and focus and constituency behind the importance of youth sports, which is actually, and this is surprising to most, receiving less and less funding every year. So essentially, so this is essentially about $1 billion lost over a three-year period in the late 2000s, which is like the most recent data we have, out of youth sports, mostly because of the general kind of disinvestment in public education, sadly. And so essentially then fewer kids are able to participate, and particularly by economics. So if you're a parent with means, then you can take, you can pay that $250 fee that you suddenly have to pay, what maybe I or you took for granted when we were growing up. And but if you're a lower income parent, you can't. And so then that your child then can't play.
So are you talking about a shift from youth sports that generally were a part of school systems and publicly available park systems to this more privatized view?
Yes.
So I again, have two teenagers and and have seen this shift to like club and the very high fees that you pay for club, and then the coach is convincing you that your kids have to play year round or they're going to lose their touch and so they're all going to go be Olympians and they're playing fewer sports. We all played three or four, which I've heard actually helps you.
It's very good for you.
But what's interesting too is the burnout rate, seeing these kids hit the wall and say, I'm really tired of this.
So essentially we saw, I mean, it manifests in a lot of ways. That's one manifest, like one manifestation is this specialization early, which even, you know, Tom Brady was on a panel that we pulled together and was talking about how, like, he played many sports in high school. You know, he didn't, he wasn't even the starting quarterback in his high school team until he was a junior. So so that's one manifestation. The other is that by economy, you know, by people's economics not being able to play. But another is we saw schools letting go of entire middle school sports programs. And or they would only be able to keep, you know, football. So there's a gender aspect too, sort of which are the most popular programs. So it really was a crisis, and we felt that people didn't know it was a crisis. And so, you know, back to that question of awareness, part one was how do we use the power of Dick's as a marketing engine? And they do some beautiful creative that really speaks to the power of sports. How do we use that to raise awareness of this issue, right? And perception of it from everyone gets to play sports if they want to wait, there's a real problem here. And then how do we pivot them to action? So we built together a crowdfunding platform, which in the first year actually was Dick's owned and operated their own crowdfunding platform. But in the second year, we sort of recognized there was a lot of benefits in partnership. So we were working with Donors Choose. Charles Best is speaking today.
Yeah.
He was one of, you know, my favorite people in social impact.
He's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he's just fantastic. So, so now essentially, so Dick's puts up matching funds for all donations to youth sports. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And so it's that great, I think what I like about it is that it had, because the client in this case was integrated, their foundation and marketing folks were working together from the start, which is an unusual, sometimes, asset to find, then the whole campaign was seamless. And so you had awareness, perception, and action all happening at the same time. So that's one of my most, you know, kind of, I guess it's one of my favorites because it's holistic. You don't always get the chance to.
And I know this campaign. Dick's is a place I've been to a lot. And I'm very familiar. They've done a good job of making sure the consumer.
Exactly. They activate in store. They do, they do back to school and holiday in-store donations like roundups or donate a dollar, and they've raised significant amounts of money given the foot traffic that they have in the store to add to their own kind of corpus contribution to the fund. So that's one of my real favorites. And again, it's like I wouldn't call it a movement just because of what we were talking about before, but I would say this is a brand operating, I think, in a really powerful way to say, wait, there's a problem here where people aren't aware of it. Let's get people aware of it using our unique asset, which is marketing, which foundations and nonprofits just don't have as much access to. And then let's get them to act as much as possible.
It's smart social good.
Yeah, exactly.
Smart philanthropy, smart marketing, kind of mixing it all together.
Exactly. So that's one example. And then just another, and stop me if we're running out of time, but just on the other end of the spectrum, we were actually hired by a Jewish giving circle called Natan, which, you know, is far away from Dix, as you can sort of imagine, like 600 stores and like one Jewish giving circle in New York, which is a great organization with an incredible leader named Felicia Herman. But and they were trying to think about, okay, how do we care about giving circles. The research around giving circles is really strong. So these are when people come together, friends, other people get together and they pool their money and they make a donation. As a result, they have greater impact. They might be able to do more due diligence than they would alone. Yep. And it's fun and social. Yep. So there's a lot of research. How do we take this from ours and make it more of a movement, or, you know, more of a something that more people are accessing? So we helped them conceive and launch of a program called AmplifierGiving.org, which essentially is an accelerator for giving circles. So if you are thinking, hey, you know, I really like to get together with my four or five friends and start a giving circle, but what the heck do I do?
Yeah, this, you don't have, I mean, Social Venture Partners operates kind of under this model, but right. That sounds a little more fluid.
Exactly.
Like that you could just do this with.
Exactly. And access to everybody. So like Social Venture Partners, like there's a good service, there's a good model for higher dollar donations. But this was also just like, what if you have $20 and you want to get together with 10 people of $20?
Yeah, or you're not working with a community foundation.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, and so it's spread, and you know, I like it because in the KPI category, it's like we can actually count the number of giving circles that have started as a result of this. And what's fun is that then that was recognized, and they've gotten support from the Gates Foundation to pull together other folks that are thinking about giving circles and donations in new ways. So that was one where it's like such a sort of, you know, bottom up, you know, it was not a big budget operation. Mm-hmm. It was a modest budget, but, you know, smart thinking, strategy, planning, and execution. And I think they've really, you know, hit on something and are really actually growing the number of giving circles.
Yeah, it's like the democratization of giving really to everyone, which, frankly, philanthropy really hasn't been about everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Which sounds weird, but.
No, it's right. It's, I mean, it's dominated by the headlines of the Buffetts and the Giving Pledge and all of that. So
let me close with one. One other question. So what kind of trends are you seeing? What's kind of top of mind for you right now that we should be watching out for in the world that you're working in?
Well, I definitely think the sort of polarized political environment is on people's minds. It's really, it's a moment where consumers are more and more asking brands to take a stand. And that, back to the movement question, that's an uncomfortable place for brands. I think traditionally, you know, companies take an issue, but usually it's an issue that's not particularly risky, right? Like, we support youth empowerment. Who's against youth empowerment or education? But, you know, on guns or on reproductive health, and reproductive rights, you know, these are issues that are much more uncomfortable for companies. And so I think that folks are really trying to figure out how to grapple with that. And it's not an easy question.
It's not.
You know, that you can just say, it's easy from the outside to say, yeah, just take a stand. But from the inside, they're obviously navigating people on, they've got consumers on both sides of it.
Well, and they have employees.
Employees
and
on
both sides.
And
within an employee base, you have people who think different things.
Exactly, exactly. And that's a great point. So I think what we usually, you know, it's important to know where your employees stand and where your consumers stand, and to, you know, use that as part of your decision making. I think the other thing is to get ahead of it. Like, don't wait until, you know, David Hogg is tweeting at you to, you know, to abandon some program that was insulting. Get ready. Like, know that you're going to be asked. Do the hard work with your employees, with your consumers, to understand what your position will be. And then when it happens, you can quickly make a decision. Because, you know, I mean, you probably followed the Roseanne Barr, like, ABC Disney question. I mean, what did they have? They responded within, I mean, it was like a couple of hours.
It was impressive.
I was like, holy smokes. But that 2 hours, so even that, right, there was so much negative and pushing and criticism. So, I thought, like, that the fact that that was 2 hours by a company as large as Disney about a decision so.
And it was such a decisive decision. I think they really set a new standard
I
that
agree.
Now other brands are going to have to, you know, be ready, right, because the expectation is that you can do
right.
it that
quickly. Exactly. But people like us who work with clients like this, like, what was that 2 hours like? Were they ready for that? Was that like a crisis meeting? Like, who was there? What? So that I'm just, so I think that just.
You need to find that out. And
exactly.
Come back
yeah.
And tell us.
I would love that. So the more prepared you are, the quicker you can respond. And the quicker you respond, the more authentic your response looks. Because if you wait a long time, it doesn't look so authentic anymore. And that's what people are looking for.
And it did feel authentic. It felt like, oh, wow, crossed a line. Now.
Oh,
and that's what makes me say, oh, great. There are human beings
exactly.
here making really good decisions.
That's the thing, that some executives came out and they were posting on social about it. I think that's important. So it's not just like corporate statement. Yeah. So
I actually prefer when people are on Twitter versus
absolutely.
The organization.
Yeah.
Because you feel like you're hearing from a person.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so that's, I mean, that's obviously a really, you know, powerful trend. I think another is saturation. You know, it's really hard to find a company now that's not doing something good. So then how do you distinguish yourself? How do you stand out? And I think, that's not an easy question to answer. But I think things we talk to our clients about are, what is real leadership for you and for this issue? And how can you get close to that line that feels like real leadership? Because that's what people are looking for. Another piece on that is, the CEO role versus brands. You know, it's really good research. A guy named Mike Toffel at Harvard Business School has done research about CEO activism mm-hmm. as distinct from brand activism, which I think, there's really room for that to stand out. So I think that question of leadership, authenticity, and then in the tactics, what stands out about tactics? Your strategy has to be strong, but how can you do something new? And that's hard for folks like us because that's shifting all the time. When we did Pepsi Refresh, voting was the coolest, newest thing, but then by the time we were helping with Diggs, it was like, that's been there, done that. So, okay, let's try crowdfunding because no brand had really kind of like built their own crowdfunding. And, but you have to keep moving that to what's new, what's different. How do you do, what are the new levers that we can kind of come up with? So I think that's, so it's kind of like the strategy getting right and being, as close to what feels risky as possible. And then thinking about the risk, the tactics. And then I think the other piece is just, making sure that the whole organization is aligned, which everyone talks about, but it's so difficult. Yeah.
Yeah.
I always say, like, think of all the C-suite, right? Like, you've got chief marketing folks, you need them on board. You've got the chief people mm-hmm. officers, they're got an interest here. You've got the CSR folks, you've got the finance folks. So, it's harder than it may seem from the outside when we think companies are these, like, beautifully running organizations, when like any large organization, sometimes people aren't talking to each other and they have their own incentives and performance metrics. And so, more and more, how can you break those down? So just a few thoughts there.
Yeah, well, Grant, this has been great. Okay. I cannot thank you enough for joining us today. This has been a really interesting conversation that I'm going to think about. I think it might spawn some other conversations.
Great.
So for our listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Champions for Social Good. To learn more about Good Core and the work Grant and his team are doing to help organizations build these impactful initiatives, follow at Garrison Grant and at Good Core on Twitter. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode, and keep up with the conversation between episodes by following us on Twitter at Rachel Hutchison and at Blackbaud. Thanks so much for listening.